All right, we are here. And welcome. It is certainly a pleasure for us to speak with you. And a pleasure indeed to speak to you of something very important. So often in spiritual development and workshops oriented towards the spiritual path, whatever spiritual paths there are, so much attention is often given to psychic phenomena, to uplifting concepts, to ideas about spirit. And sometimes, many times, the information can almost unground the people who come to listen. Yes, you want that lift. Yes, you want to have a certain sense of transcendence of the ordinary, limited ideas of life. But very often, the emotions are not addressed. And it's the emotions who play in the body, who help you stay connected to the earth, so that whatever you learn and whatever great experiences that you have can be integrated into your physical plane daily life, grounded in reality, so that you can respond practically. You can respond elegantly to your life. You can have a greater sense of knowing who you are. A greater dynamic of you, a greater expanse of you to know. But unfortunately, most spiritual disciplines, spiritual pathways, religions, and so forth, have had a tendency to deny physicality, and with it to deny emotionality. You see, emotions are like your thoughts. If you notice, it's kind of hard to just stop thinking. Okay, just going to stop thinking, no more thoughts. How long can you go? Now, unless you are very, very well practiced in absolute mental silence meditations, you're probably not going to be able to have much more silence in your mind, in your thinking, in those thoughts that run through your mind, the chatter, endless chatter of your mind telling you about what you're perceiving and what you're thinking and what needs to be done next and how, oh, is the body comfortable? Oh, there's a pain in the toe, etc. Can you really quiet the mind? No, because the mind is part of a flow. It's part of an energy that you use in order to move through your life. It's one of the ways that you are becoming aware of yourself is through your mind. You've noticed, and surely so, that when you pay attention to the thoughts that are in your mind, and pay attention all day long and really listen to what's going on there, you can really get an orientation to who you are, to what you are about, what you believe, what you think is true. You also have parts of you talking like a group amongst themselves. You have the internal parent telling you what you should supposed to be doing now. Okay, it's this and this time now. You need to go to this appointment. And you have your inner child self wanting to be nurtured and loved. You have all these internal parts of yourself, all vying for attention in your mind. Now, most people don't pay that much attention to who's talking in there. what subpart of you is talking. And so, of course, that's no way of knowing what part of you is feeling what you're feeling. Emotions, like thoughts, are in continuous flow. When you meditate and quiet your mind, what you're attempting to do is taking this energy that is moving through you at all times, this energy of life, the energy of consciousness, the energy of your awareness, and building it up and putting it into a particular orientation so that you have a power built up with it. Then when you can direct your attention, it has tremendous force. Your emotions move just like your thoughts all day long, moving, moving, moving. In fact, for every thought that you think, there is an emotion going on. And so even fewer people than those who pay attention to what they're thinking are paying attention to what they're feeling all day long. It has simply not been in your culture in a way of supporting the real, true awakening and knowledge and wisdom within yourself, which lies underneath those thoughts and those feelings, in the awareness of the depth of yourself. Emotions must be kept in motion. You can only stop emotions for meditative purposes in order to redirect the power of your energy to a particular point of focus. The great sages, the great mystics, those who have spiritual powers that are so awesome, these people have been able to organize their energies, to hold their energies in suspension, and then point the energies in particular places. Now, we're not going to go into the development of powers today. But what we want to point out is that other than doing that, it is absolutely imperative that your thoughts and your emotions have a freedom about them, and especially your emotions. The connection with your life is much more profound and deep with your emotional body. The emotional body is connected to your soul, the part of you that is the unique spark that chose to have a physical lifetime, that chose to experience physicality. And your soul is connected to the ultimate love, to the ultimate divine. Your emotions are, in a sense, more significant and more of impact than your thoughts. So the reason we're talking about emotion today is so that you can free those emotions from their restraints that your culture has put upon them. So that you can utilize your emotions, so that you can be present with who you are and live your life with a greater self-awareness, a greater knowing, a greater presence. For indeed, it is emotion that moves your lives. It is emotion that motivates you to do what you do, to connect with the people that you connect with, to explore the realms of thought that attract you, that call you. Emotion is so much more primal. And in that actually lies the fear that so many have of their emotions and their emotional power. Your emotions can be channeled. Your emotions can be available for you as messengers of your knowing, messengers of who you are, messengers to tell you about what you need to know. They must be kept in motion. They cannot be stifled. They cannot be repressed without consequences on your part of your awareness. The more a person has suppressed their awareness of their emotions or their capacity to deal with their emotions, to understand, to play with their emotions, to accept their emotions, the more they are unconscious. And you see, there are a lot of people who go through their life pretty much on rote behavior. They learn the patterns. They learn the mechanisms. And they just keep repeating the behaviors. If you have had certain types of patterns that have happened in your life, patterns of frustration, patterns of limitation, things that seem to happen over and over again in yet a different form, perhaps, and with a different person or a different circumstance slightly, but the underlying structure of the circumstance, the underlying similarity is not to be missed. Then you have a part of you in your emotional body that has not been recognized, that has not been accepted or understood or utilized. It is so critical. So many people make incredible spiritual progress, amazing awarenesses that they learn about, and they take courses and they practice this and that meditative technique. And sometimes it appears that they're incredibly evolved. You may have even experienced it yourself at some point where you feel, my gosh, I can feel my spirituality. I can feel connection with the divine. I can feel. But then something happens. A circumstance shows up. Somebody gives you a hard time. And all of a sudden, this incredibly glorious spirituality goes flying out the window. And you feel vulnerable. You feel perhaps weak or exposed. You feel perhaps confused. You feel frustrated. Don't know exactly what happened. We would suggest it's because in circumstances that require your presence, emotionally speaking. If you don't have it, you're going to respond to that circumstance according to the quote-unquote rationale method. Most people do their personal and spiritual growth by rationalization. They'll do processes, thinking processes. They'll be so aware of their stuff, of their issues, of everything that bothers them, of their patterns. But they're still, in a sense, almost victimized by those patterns should they arise. We want to suggest that what we're going to talk about today will enable you, even in the most difficult circumstances of your life, the most challenging, the ones that you have experienced over and over again with perhaps in another, you know, room with another person, with another, you know, lineup of circumstances, those patterns of great similarity that seem to reflect each other over and over. You'll find that utilizing this, what we speak about today, will enable you to stay present, to stay in your power, to honor and respect who you are as the light being you are, and to be able to respond from that powerful place. And when you do that, the situation resolves. It is as if your subconscious, your higher self, perhaps some of your spirit helpers who work with you in your growth will recognize, oh, you got it. You learned. You're on another level now. Great. We don't have to send these things over and over and over again to you. You can graduate to something else, to a better, more friendly, more harmonious pattern. But you have to understand what the emotional bases of these things are. And then you can turn them around. Now, you look at your culture. What does your culture have to say about emotions? All of you got this while you were growing up. Emotions. Well, if you are emotional, that means you are weak, you are sissy, you are pathetic, you are just not that smart and sophisticated. You're not that valuable. You're immature. You're incapable of making a rational decision. Maybe you're not trustworthy. Hey, emotions, yeah, those are scary things. You're out of control. You've let yourself go. You're irresponsible. And you also realized when you were growing up that if you were emotional, not only would you get judged for it, and that didn't feel very good at all, but it could get you into trouble. You know, when the channel was small, if she did something wrong and her mother decided to punish her and she would get angry about it, her mother would double the punishment. That'll teach you. You don't get angry. That's not okay. And then you have to stuff yourself twice, emotionally. Hold it back twice. Push it down twice. Ignore it twice. And that's what you were taught. You were taught to make emotions insignificant. You were taught to kind of ignore them. You were taught to kind of stifle them. Pretend they're not there. To translate the emotion into some kind of rational talk. To kind of make it appear that you were not emotional. Whatever it is, let's put another image on here, right? You can't come across as an emotional person. And it's true in some areas of your culture. You find people that are very, very emotional about stuff, and they get all hyper and bent out of shape about some issue like a political issue. And you wonder, well, you know, they're not thinking. They don't think it through. That's right. Basically, they found a little group that said, okay, we're all going to get emotional about this, and we will use this emotional energy to shut everybody else up. You've seen it. Emotions are used in a sense to create tension and stress for the other person, deliberately, to manipulate or control someone. See, those who understand the fear that most people have in public about feeling a strong emotion and being able to stand up for themselves and express it, they can manipulate people with emotions. They can get them all upset and angry. And if the people get angry and start getting, you know, hot and start talking louder, they can say, oh, see, you're pathetic. You're emotional. I can't, give you the time of day. Or if you start getting emotional and that gets them wrought up and you start attacking or something like that, then if they get out bent out of shape, if they get upset, they'll blame it on you. Emotions can be very handily used to manipulate other people by those who are such devious in their thinking. And a main reason that people would manipulate other people's emotions was so that those people will not see the emotions these people, these manipulators, are carrying. Don't look at my emotion, we'll look at yours. Ha ha. Then I'll be superior. I'll be the logical one. I'll be the rational one. And you'll be the, you know, the pathetic one. And of course, they're the ones who instigate your emotion in the first place. So they set it up to where you can't respond from any honest place whatsoever. Or they gotcha. You're the one being emotional, not me. So, of course, growing up in this reality, this culture, is kind of like making your way through a minefield. You know? Who's going to jump on you any moment? Who's going to go and push your buttons and get you all bent out of shape? And then, you know, after that, oh gosh, then, you know, there's hell to pay. You're going to have to, you know, cool yourself down. You're going to have to, you know, there's work done there. You're going to have to do some work on yourself. The channel was reading a book of a woman's experience in her marriage. And she had married this man who was Mr. Calm and Rational. And he would say the most cruel things to her. And when she would get all upset, he would turn to her and say, you know, you really have a problem handling your anger. You know, you need to go and work on that. It took her a long time to break through. We don't want you to have to spend all that amount of work doing it. When you have the resources in your awareness to turn it all around now, so that no matter what someone says, no matter what issue comes up for you on the emotional level, you'll be able to respond from a place of power. Not like the place of the child, which is what the manipulator is trying to get you to do. The manipulator knows that most people's emotions are repressed, so when people do respond emotionally, they are in their child energy. When you're in your child energy, are you not easier to manipulate? Of course. You just come down as a heavy-duty parental, judgmental, authoritative figure. And a person who goes back into their emotions has lost it, and they can't stand in their authority. If you've ever noticed that. So you had to weave your way through years and years of this stuff. And you have found it not only in your family with your parents, and if you had siblings with them, but you also found it at school with teachers and other kids. And then you found it in with your relationships, with your romances. You found it in your work when you started taking on jobs and doing work in society. You found emotions to be the key to maintaining your power. And the people who were maintaining their power through manipulating their emotions are maintaining power over other people. They are the controllers. So what you generally learn when you're growing up is you learn all the verbiage, all the words that can help you appear in control and help you perhaps manipulate somebody else, and or at least to get them off your case, at least to get yourself some space. So it's been a journey fraught with a lot of stress. But you have instinctively within yourself known, if you're on a spiritual path, that somehow or another it's not a good idea to stuff your emotions, to get your emotions pulled back in and judged and diminished and ridiculed and isolated and stuck in some place and rationalized through. Because you can rationalize an emotion. You can rationalize an anger that you have over somebody who took advantage of you. You can rationalize, you can think it through, you can rationalize, you could say, okay, I'm going to be a good person, I'm going to forgive this person, and so on and so on. But if you haven't dealt with the emotion itself, you're just going to have to keep rationalizing it, keep rationalizing it, because it's going to keep coming up. And you have to keep going over it and squelching it and pushing it down with more and more verbiage, more and more rationale, more and more logic. If you go too long, your belief systems will lock you into a very tight, unpleasant box. However, even though emotions in your culture are perceived as a very negative circumstance, you know, how many people perceive anger, a person flaring up in anger, as being a positive response? You just generally don't. You generally, it strikes, you know, you react to somebody getting in anger. You may be afraid of them. You may get angry at them for being angry. You may get some kind of upset. You may want to run away, not deal with them. But what if a person could flare up in their anger? And you could just stay right there in your center and know what's going on. Gives you quite an edge. Gives you a presence. It keeps you from being manipulated. It keeps you aware of your power. And if you allow yourself to feel your emotions all day, to be aware of them all day, you get to feel better and better emotions. Because see, if you're trying really hard to push down the anger and the other bad emotion, fear, okay. And there's also hurt. If you try to deny them, ignore them, repress them, push them away, just the way that most people have been taught, you don't get the power of them. You're not going to feel good. You're going to be in child. You're going to be openly manipulatable. However, if you can recognize the value of what you are feeling and understand how to work with it, you can turn most emotions around. Anger and fear can be often turned around on the spot. You can step out of them. You can step into a path that leads you to a different and more positive future. It can accelerate your spiritual development and spiritual growth. It can accelerate your receptivity and your capacity to connect with your spirit helpers, spirit guides, with the divine. It can bring you ecstasy. It can bring you the heights of love, enthusiasm, and absolute glorious joy. Most people keep their emotions just enough repressed that they keep themselves out of feeling a lot of joy and ecstatic bliss and love too. It all goes together. A lot of people keep themselves on an emotional median line, i.e. mediocre energy. Just zone, zone, zone. How are you? Oh, okay. Zone, zone, zone. What do you feel today when you hear this or think about that? It's okay. Zone, zone, zone. Keep it everything kind of placid, calm. the channel had a friend who who was very emotional in her, as her nature, creative, artistic. You know, she had a tendency to be dramatic, up and down and up and down. And she roomed with a woman who had, whose parents had come over from Japan, very traditional, and so therefore had been raised in a traditional Asian household where everybody is very quiet, subdued. And if there's an issue, and you have an issue with a person who's been trained in this old way, they will right away placate you so that you will stop being emotional, stop having any judgment. They will take responsibility and blame, and they will take it on themselves right away. Oh, I'm sorry, it's my fault. Even if it isn't. And also, from that basis of that culture, this friend noticed that her roommate, who had a boyfriend, who treated her badly, would simply say, oh, you know, he's not being very nice, whatever. And put up with it. She couldn't understand, because if she had been treated one-tenth of the manipulative nastiness that this boyfriend had visited on her roommate, she would have been all bent out of shape. She would have been in fury. And yet she was trying really hard to be like a roommate, because she said, that's what I want to be like. I want to have that wonderful calm. I want to be that peaceful person. And so she was repressing her own emotional energy. Now, a roommate probably was too. And there may come a time when her roommate would have shifted and decided to become more energetically emotional. But at least the message was there when we spoke to this friend and said, you know, what's your temperament? Who are you really? You're a creative person. You like excitement. You like drama. You got to have a lot of life. It's got to be really interesting, colorful, vibrant, lots of changes. That's you. You can't go and just squelch your emotional nature. You got to learn to work with it. Anger, the most frequently judged one, at least you sense that when you're in public or when you're with other people, that you can sense a person who's angry. Immediately, everyone around just, you know, gets tense and judges them. This was meant originally as a way to keep that angry person subdued, that they would get, you know, their community disapproval. But communities are not so tightly woven any longer. So everybody can sit around and disapprove of that person, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that person's going to do anything about it. But that person will be judged. Anger, however, is a, like all emotions, is a positive emotion. It means something. Anger means that what, when you get angry, it means that what you're responding to is important to you. It has significance to you. And it is, stands in the way, whatever it is, of what you see as success, as love, as joy, as a positive future. Anger very often is directed about image, how you are seen, how you're perceived. Anger is often felt as a threat, but it can give you this feedback. When you are responding in anger, then you know that somehow or another, this is something that is a resistance or an obstacle or blockage to something that you really want to experience, to a life you really want to feel. And if you treat it as such, it can give you valuable information. It can tell you when you're at a point of giving up your power to someone else. Because a lot of times if someone gets really angry at you, your first is instinctive response, perhaps, can be to give them your power. Okay, whatever you want. All right. Or to give them a lot of attention that they don't really, perhaps, deserve. But you see it as an obstacle. Now, if you were to be aware of how to utilize your anger, you would say, you know, I feel strongly about this. There's some issue here I feel really, really strongly about. I feel passionate about this issue. Are you passionate about your self-respect? Are you passionate about, you know, people being caring for other people? Are you passionate about people allowing other people to be free, independent, communicative, expressive of who they are? You may feel passionately about this. And yet, you will take it personally most of the time. And therefore, you will respond from your child, from your inner child. That's the one who will be responding and reacting, rather than you seeing what the issue really is about and responding as an adult in your power about the real issue. Those who trigger your anger are also either deliberately doing it as a manipulator, or they don't know how to understand emotions. And so when you get angry in response, they just want to run away, or they'll get defensive. Maybe you might get defensive because you don't see the big issue. If you see the big issue, if you know how to work with your anger, you just put an end to all of that craziness right away. You just put everything back into sync, and you stand up for whatever it is, whatever boundary that got crossed. If someone lies to you, your boundary of trust got crossed. If somebody treats you badly and with disrespect, your boundary of respect got crossed. If a person judges you for something you didn't do, it's not fair. One of your boundaries, your principles of an equal relationship got crossed. The violation of a boundary gets crossed. If you know what the boundary is in the circumstance, you can just basically stand up for it. Most of the time, the other person will not have a way to keep the negative energy, to keep the judgments, to keep the craziness going. It'll turn around. Anger will turn into passion. You will stand in your passion. You will envision a positive future for yourself, and you'll see that this issue needs some resolution right now. And you will speak to it. Not from taking it personally, not from the child place. How dare you do that to me? How could you do that to me? But from an adult place. Wait a minute, let's look at the issue. Let's look at this. Let's feel, this is important. We need to feel this. We need to own this issue, this space. I don't want you violating my boundaries. Fear is considered a negative as well. It's also considered more of a negative with a kind of a victim twist to it. People who are fearful, oh, they're kind of sad because, you know, they're just, you know, life is hard for these people, and fear, people who are in fear, oh my, they're just weak. They don't have confidence. They don't have strength. They don't have their act together. They're kind of lost all over the place. A lot of judgments about a person in fear. And a lot of this judgment is because the person's judging the person in fear or getting afraid themselves. Let's judge that person, and then we won't pay attention to the fear they're bringing up in us. Let's shut them down. Let's push them away. Let's give them a hard time. And maybe we won't pick it up like a disease, you know, like catching a germ. Hey, maybe you won't pick it up. You know, some of those emotions can be pretty infectious. One person get angry, another person can get angry. Pretty soon you got a whole bunch of people being angry. Same thing with fear. One person's fearful, another person's fearful, and the other people say, maybe there's something I should be afraid about. And pretty soon there's a whole bunch of people being afraid. You've noticed this in the stock market, yes? A pundit comes out and says, well, you know, we're heading down. We're heading to, you know, bottom line. This is a bad thing. It's going to be really, really sucky. Everybody's going to really suffer and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, people are going to go freak out and sell, sell, sell. Later on, those pundits will say, hey, everything's undervalued now. It's time to buy. But sometimes they can't even turn that around because everybody's still in the fear, 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 on supporting each other in their fear, fear, fear. Fear is also oriented towards the future. Fear is about perhaps that something very unpleasant is going to happen there in the future, something that you cannot control, something that you don't have power about. The more images that are scary about your future, the more what if this should happen and what if that should happen, the more worry that's going on there, the worse it is. You can get stuck in fear and go cycling through it for quite a while because there's plenty of fear out there for you to pick up on. If you're being angry, you go around, there's plenty of anger in your culture. There are a lot of people who are angry. It's in the airwaves. You'll just pick it up from here and there and everywhere. You'll attract angry people if you're angry. If you're fearful, there's lots of fear traveling around there in the airwaves. You'll just pick up fears from left and right. Things will be presented to you. The most scary stories on TV will happen when you turn on the channel right there. It's amazing. You'll attract it and draw it to yourself. But fear actually also holds a tremendous amount of responsiveness to survival. See, fear is the basic survival energy warning. Fear says, here's a boundary you're about to cross, and you don't know what's on the other side. So who is facing this boundary? The child within you, or the powerful you, the light being? Because if you can see that there is a boundary you're about to cross over, and you don't know what's on the other side of it, but if you are in your power, and if you are aware of who you are and what your mission is, what you're doing here on this plane, you can step forward knowing that what's on the other side you'll be able to handle. You'll have some confidence, and you'll be excited about it. Great, I'm breaking out of a box. Most people, if they don't approach fear correctly and learn from it, go running and hiding into the box deeper and deeper and deeper. Is there a corner I haven't hidden in yet? Let me go find it. Let me find a box to crawl under. Let me find something. Hide. Well, you don't hide from yourself, of course. But what we notice when people get scared, their energy fields contract in. And instead of having a nice aura that goes out, you know, a couple of feet or 3 or 4 feet or whatever in any direction, it all of a sudden gets like, all of a sudden you're wearing a wetsuit. Your aura shrinks in so much. You don't have the buffer anymore. You feel very unsafe. Now, for your survival purposes in the physical plane, fear was a gift to you so that you would know where there is a boundary that you're stepping over, where there's some kind of line, where there's an unknown. If you have anxiety, that's an unknown within you. You don't know what's really going on inside you. And then you'll project it out there and be even more scared of the unknown. A third emotion that people see as a negative is hurt. And a lot of people manipulate with this one, who are not really hurt. Hurt comes when you have been damaged, when you have been wounded, when you have been stabbed, when you've been torn, ripped, diminished, when your light has been virtually extinguished. That's hurt. But a lot of people use hurt as a way of playing self-pity. Boo-hoo, poor me, let me see if I can manipulate someone. Or to use hurt as a indication of that their big fancy self-image that they've been projecting out there, that they want everybody to believe in, their big facade, has been sullied by someone. Oh, that hurts. Which means you've gone over your line. Step back. You should feel guilty now. Hopefully you'll feel guilty, and then I can get something out of you. Then you'll feel bad about yourself, and then you won't look at my self-image anymore. Most of the time, hurt is really used for manipulative purposes, because to feel the hurt within yourself is very deep and very devastating and very, in a sense, threatening to your survival. It feels like an end, and there's pain involved. No one likes pain. Emotional pain that generally goes into physical pain as well. But hurt also is a message. It's a message about love, about loving yourself. Hurt is a message that you've been torn because there was part of you who didn't know who you were, and you were still holding on to a part of yourself that you were not. And this part is being torn up. This part is being cut out of you. This part is being pulled out of you, eliminated out of you. When you have a death of a loved one, you can feel very hurt. But really only if, you know, before that loved one goes, they reject you. You know, you can only be really hurt by someone who knows you. Because if they know you, they know just how to tear you. They just know where your vulnerabilities are. They know what to do there. You generally can get hurt in a love relationship or between family members. Someone you're close to, someone you're intimate to can hurt you. And in the public, as far as your self-image is concerned, you can get hurt after a while if there's enough public approval of you and so on. You can feel wounded because you are looking to that public for validation, for love. So one of the ways of seeing hurt is to recognize, okay, I am feeling hurt. I'm feeling wounded. Is this my ego that's feeling wounded? That somebody is not seeing me for the facade I'm hoping that they see of me? I'm hiding any inadequacy and I'm trying to look perfect? Did they bang that up? Did they see around behind it? Is that where I'm getting my quote-unquote hurt? Or is this hurt really from somebody who knows me, who has just hurt me, who has just rejected me, who has just pushed me away, who has been cold to me? Someone who I've loved and who I thought had loved me. You see, when you understand what is really hurt, then you can recover from it so much more quickly. Now, hurt doesn't turn around really fast. You can turn anger around in just seconds. You can turn fear around in a minute. But hurt sometimes takes a few days. Because your soul gets involved there. You have to go down deep and reevaluate who you are. But the hurt gives you that opportunity to go pull in, to nurture yourself, to love yourself, and to redefine yourself. The places that got hurt, the places that were looking to others. You need to reshape those, empower yourself more there. And you will heal from that hurt and go on to do more, to love again, to have more joy. And if you can heal hurt once, you will be so much stronger, so much more empowered. It'll be difficult for you to be whammied by hurt again. There's a strength of lovingness that comes from it, so that someone who can be cruel to you, you can respond to with what other emotions that are there. Most of the time, people who say they're hurt are really angry. Or they're afraid for themselves. There's a lot of self-obsessing amongst people who say that they're hurt. But if you're genuinely hurt, you can turn it around. You can find that part of you that feels weak, that feels vulnerable and sad, and you can love that part and heal that part with some meditations. And over a few days, you'll find yourself expanded, more brilliant than before, more capable of having compassion for that other person. You're supposed to have compassion for that person like with a snap of your fingers if you're a spiritual person. You can't let anybody get to you if you're a spiritual person. Some of that kind of really keeps people who are on a spiritual path in boxes. They're very afraid that they're going to appear unspiritual or not good enough. There's whole religions that are based on this whole stuff. They're going to control people with anger, fear, and hurt. That's right. They're going to stay right there in the box and they're going to feel so guilty about themselves that they're not going to be able to move anywhere and give us a threat. They're going to be nicely controllable and they'll do what we want them to do. It's sad. It's sad that a pathway to the divine can be so abused. And that's why people are seeking spirituality outside of those rules, outside of those cultural complexes, those matrices of pain. And it's a good thing. You're part of that movement. You're part of that exploration on the planet to find how to step out of all this pain. There are a lot of people feel pain and feel hurt when they're really angry. Some people, when they get really angry, they do feel actual pain when it gets to a certain level of intensity. They cannot handle intensity. Emotional intensity is really the scariest bugger there is. Some people have so much difficulty with emotional intensity that give them a good dose of ecstatic bliss and they will absolutely freak out. They can't handle it. It's too intense. They don't know how to handle emotions. So therefore, they don't know how to handle emotions that are intense, too far beyond their capacity. But you know emotions are important. You know that when you feel right, when you feel the flow, when you stand up for yourself and you stay in your power, and you can love and you can feel all sorts of good emotions, and you can feel the darker or the more limiting or the so-called negative emotions and be okay and just fly right through them, you'll find that that's an incredible spiritual evolution right there. You can step beyond the ego. You can step into the presence of the divine. And you can take it. You can handle it. The divine is so intense, so far beyond the amount of love that most people can even imagine having. So people take a little teeny tiny taste of the divine, a little bit more love than they normally allow outside their boxes. And it's their inspiration for their lives. It will last for years, reminding them there's something more. It's more, and it's emotional. The spiritual path is really ultimately fully emotional. You can't have a thought without a feeling, and you can't have a feeling without a thought. So realize, these emotions are going on all the time. Why not intensify them and play with them and move them and dream new futures with yourself and them? Hurt moves into self-love. So you've got anger that moves into passion. Now, there's several emotions in the anger group. Hostility is anger with defensiveness and fear mixed in. You've got frustration, which is anger with powerlessness mixed in. You've got impatience, which is anger with blame mixed in. You have variations on your angers. But anger can be moved into passion. Passion. To feel the passion. You don't get angry unless there's some passion there. So bring the passion up as a positive thing. Utilize it as a positive force for your life. Revel in being passionate. Passionate about what you believe in. Passionate about what you know. Passionate about who you are. Passionate about your love, your creativity, your truth. And you will not be a victim of other people's anger, or of your own, for that matter. Fear translates into excitement. When you have fear, all your senses are at their peak. This is a survival mechanism. That's why they call it, survival. The HPA axis is called, hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis in your body is set up to put you in a major panic when your life is threatened. But the panic doesn't disorient you and disorganize you and make you ditzy. That's a learned response to fear. If you take the positive side of fear, you'll recognize that it has made you more alert, more aware, your senses are keen, you're absolutely right there at a most exciting point of being able to burst out of your box, to see beyond your old limitations. Move fear into excitement. Things that you dread. That is fear mixed with a sense of knowing. You know, really, underneath it all, what's going to happen, and you're dreading it. You know what's going to happen on the spiritual level for you. You're going to be more You're going to shift. You're going to change. Something's going to happen for you. But if you take it and make it an avoidance, then you've lost your growth opportunity. Terror comes with fear plus powerlessness. Terror is at the boundary of your consensus reality. When you step out of the consensus reality box, out of your cultural boxes, you will hit terror at some point because it's absolutely alien to go outside that box. And you can feel very alone out there. And you can come running back into the box to seek the familiar. And by the way, anger also functions that way too. When you leave the consensus reality, when you step beyond the limits of other people's realities, old rage will come up. Old rage is old angers and old emotions and disturbances that happened at a timing in your past where you lost your power, where in a sense it was suddenly lost. It was suddenly a situation where you had to, for survival, stuff it really hard, push it down really hard, and you were not allowed to even show a flicker of it. You were so powerless. If there are any people in your life to whom you give your power and who manipulate and control you, you have huge, huge buckets of rage about that person. And any time you stand up for yourself, you'll be pushing the rage, the outrage over what someone is doing to you as a spiritual being. But you'll feel powerless. You'll be in your child self. So you see how these emotions can make you feel so vulnerable. And at the same time, you can shift them and feel very powerful. If someone hurts you and you feel the pain, you can immediately assess, is it my ego? Is it a place where I was needing validation for an approval and love from this person as a way of my self-esteem, as to giving me a sense of value and worth? If so, it's not real, real hurt. It's ego wounding. What's your response going to be? To manipulate? To make them feel guilty? It's a relationship. Try to get them back. Try to make them say they're sorry. Whatever. Instead, step in your power. Step in your love. Have compassion for yourself. When you're hurt, it means that a part of you is dropping off. And a greater capacity of love is ready to be given to you, ready for you to tap into, to claim, to own. So how are you going to be able to do this in the moment? Well, first of all, we would suggest it is wise to go and look at circumstances in your past. You have memories of being in emotional circumstances where you were put on the spot, or somebody did this or said that and triggered something and you felt such and such and you reacted and so on, and it wasn't all that great a response and didn't turn out all that great, and you felt kind of bad about it and you kind of judged yourself about it perhaps. I should have responded differently. I should have been stronger. I should have blah, blah, blah. I shouldn't have said those words. Stuff that you have to forgive yourself for. Or stuff where you felt powerless and inept and impotent with somebody else's stuff. And you were left just hanging and holding the bag, and they walk away free and you're stuck with this stuff. Just in your mind right now, it shouldn't be that hard to find one. You must have had thousands in this lifetime. By the time you're 40, you probably have had thousands. I know you probably have had at least, you know, one, you know, when you're a child, you probably have about 10 of them a day. And when you're in your 20s, you probably have about 3 or 4 of them at work a day. And when you get into your 30s, you probably have them a little bit less often. But by the time you're in your 40s, you may still be having one a week. Who knows? But you can remember something. It doesn't matter how long ago it is. The key to finding what your patterns are and what you can do with it and how you can repattern yourself is to find something that you remember strongly because it made an emotional imprint on you. All the great decisions of your life, all the decisions of power, and all the decisions of powerlessness that you've made in your life were made under emotional intensity. The most limiting personal psychic contracts you've entered into were done under moments of intense emotion. The most positive steps you've taken on your spiritual and life journey came through emotional intensity. So when you think back, find something that was intense. You'll remember it. If you haven't totally cleared it out through processing and forgiving in yourself and forgiving and releasing yourself and doing all that, you may find, or at least you will remember the circumstance, even if there's not a lot of emotion in it anymore. So what you do is you find a circumstance in the past where you felt anger or one of its buddies, you know, the frustration, the hostility, the impatience, the whatever. And the fear, or fear, it could be both anger and fear, whether anxiety, worry, tension, nervousness, or hurt, or all three. You can remember those circumstances. So you go through and you say, okay, what was the trigger? There was something that was a trigger for my emotion. And the trigger is that when somebody or some circumstance pushes your button. It's a trigger button, all right? If you are really into being, you know, important, and somebody comes and tells you how insignificant and unimportant you are, you're going to get angry at them. You know, it's something that's important to you, that you maintain this importance within this organization. Or if someone lies to you, or someone stands you up for dinner, and this was going to be the most important meeting, you can feel the anger, the frustration, or the powerlessness, or the rage. What was the incident that triggers it? Who stepped over your line for anger? Who pulled you across the line into the unknown, fear? Who gave you a scary picture of the future that you go, oh my gosh, you're scaring me? Where'd you get it? What happened? When somebody threatened you with loss of approval, loss of your job, loss of love, loss of something. And hurt. That part of you got torn and wounded. What was the trigger? The circumstance that led into it. Just pay attention, because when you look at that, you'll realize that whatever you remember has probably been part of a pattern. So if somebody lies to you over here, and therefore they're untrustworthy, and you're angry over here, and then if somebody lies to you over here 3 years later, and they're untrustworthy, and then you know, 10 years later, someone else lies to you. This linked up. You're almost expecting something to happen. Like people who keep wanting to go into business with partners. They don't feel they can do it themselves. It seems to be too daunting. They want partners. They found just seems like the perfect partner. They have the great dream, the great vision, and they're starting to move along, and it fizzles because the partner's not doing what the partner says they're going to do. All of a sudden, everything unravels. We knew someone who had relationships, and you get in the relationship with a guy, and the guy would say, "Oh, you're just the most wonderful thing. You're so fantastic. You're so fantastic." And 2 or 3 weeks later, he would be saying, "You're just too much. I don't deserve you. I don't deserve you." And he'd run away, and she'd lose. All her relationships would just keep going in this big high. "Oh, you're so great. You're so great. Oh, I'm just so insane. I can't handle it. I'm not any good for you. I'm not deserving of you. I've got to leave." That was her pattern. She went through several relationships before she broke it, before she found it. But can you imagine what emotion she went through? The high, the low. She went through the anger and the fear and the hurt. All of it. So you will have something, and you will go and you look at the trigger, because this trigger is common to the pattern. Right? Then look at your emotional response. And then what did you do with your emotional response? Did you judge it? Did you suppress it? Diminish it? Ignore it? Pretend it wasn't anything? I had a client who was working with a family member. And this family member was very, very harsh to her. Very mean, very judgmental. Very difficult to deal with. Painful, painful, painful. And so she would do her work. There was a partnership, so she'd do her work. And then she would give her, you know, the family member credit for it. As a gift, it's a gift, it's a gift, she'd say. What was she doing with that? What emotion she was feeling was anger. She was feeling some hurt because this was a family member, knew exactly how to hurt her, how to diminish her, make her feel really worthless. So what did she do in return? "Oh, I can't be angry. I can't fight back. I've got to be nice. Oh, here's a gift for you. I'll give you some of my work. I'll give to you work that you don't have to do, and you'll take the credit for it. Here, I'll support your ego. You know, now don't you like me now?" So for every emotion that you had, the anger, fear, or hurt, or all three, there was some kind of reaction to the emotion itself, the judgment or suppression. And there was a reason why you would react to the emotion that way. In the example of the woman with her family member, the emotion was anger, which she could not allow herself to express, and hurt, which she could not allow herself to stand up for and against that. And the fear that somehow or another that she would be cut off and lonely and isolated. And so with all these threats, for her, it was the wisest thing, she thought, to zip it, to appear to be really nice and sweet, and not to appear to be suffering from it at all, and not to appear angry, and not to appear, you know, mean. "I'm not going to play that mean game that my family member is playing." You know, see, there's a judgment at the family member. Blame and judgment over there. Okay. Suppressing the emotions over here. So let's placate them. Why? Because the idea is we've got to do this so that we'll have safety in the future. So what was the reason you did what you did? Why did you, what behaviors did you take and why? Was it safer to do that? Was it necessary? Was it, what was the rationale, the justification for that? Now, your child, inner child self may have been the one talking there, or your inner teen. You know how teenagers are so sensitive to any kind of judgment by their peers. And they don't want to appear exceptional. They don't want to be too visible so that they can kind of belong and merge in the group. Or maybe it's your inner adolescent, you know. And we gotta keep the exceptionality toned down. We gotta keep too much intensity because that'll draw attention. It's not safe. We gotta keep hiding. Or the person who has lots of shame and is putting on a great facade, they think, and they're terrified that the facade could crumble and people would see who they think they really are, this pathetic worm, this shame-ridden, worthless scum that they judge themselves to be. I'm not going to show any emotion, no. I'm not going to let them know. I'm going to just try to maintain this facade. I'm going to keep hiding. Because that's the only way I know how to deal with it. Now, we're not saying that these examples are your examples. But generally, there is a compromise that you have made in the past with your emotions, with your expression of your emotions. Or when you expressed them, that it didn't come out quite right. Or it created more problems. And so at some point you decided, I can't do this because it's just creating more problems. Or I've got to get it out and I've got to get it through and so on and so on. Or otherwise, I can't handle it. And so you did. You did whatever you chose to do, your behavior. And what was the impact of that behavior in the circumstance? Did it create the conclusion or the unfoldment that you had wanted it to, that you had hoped it would? Or did it take you to an unpleasant place where once again, darn, it's over and it just didn't work right? Now I have to go and do some more inner work and get out my journal and I have to forgive myself now again. Or I have to forgive them again. So how did you feel when it came to the conclusion, when you realized, okay, the pattern blew through again and now it's done. I've said my say or I've done what I, or I've kept myself quiet. I've done the actions. They've responded. I don't particularly like it. So, but where am I left with now? And you'll feel at the end of an unsatisfying circumstance, an unsatisfying communication or event, emotional event, that you will feel a bit powerless. Perhaps unclear as to where to go from here. Now, if you'll look at these patterns and you'll look at each emotion, you'll see what you did with your anger and if you had fear, what you did with your fear, and if you had some hurt, what you did with your hurt. Then what you will do is you'll go back to that same circumstance and redo it from the point of view of a light being in your power. All right. So here's the trigger. You feel the emotion, the knee-jerk response, the emotion coming in. Is it anger? Okay. In a sense, feel the anger or remember that you felt the anger. And then just kind of freeze frame it. Just kind of stop it. Step back and look at it. What is the issue? What is the issue that's there? What was the boundary? What's the self-respect boundary, perhaps, that was crossed? What was the violation of you? Was it a lie when you realized it was a lie? You realized that someone had humiliated you? when you realized that somebody was out to get you or whatever it was and you felt angry? What was it? What was the issue? Now, instead of the knee-jerk anger response, what would it be like if you stepped into that, back into that scene and kept it going, but this time you felt the passion and you stood up for it and said, this is the issue and I feel this. In other words, I feel it's not right for you to lie to me. That makes my life more difficult now because I cannot trust you. And I'm angry that I cannot trust you. The person who is angry now and speaking the truth, that self, that greater self of you, doesn't need to judge the other person. You stinker, you blankety blank, you did this, you did that, you did. No blame, don't go there. Instead, the passion, here's the issue. I want to speak about this issue. It's important. I feel passionate about it. Truth is more important here. Here's what I feel when you did that behavior, when you pushed my button, this is what happened. I felt passion. I felt this issue kick in, and I realized this and this and this, and this is what I feel I need to say now. It's my truth about how I feel and what instead I'm willing to feel and what is correct or true or what is false about this issue. Now here is where in the past, after the whole incident, you would sit around and rationale it. You know, when you're still angry at the person for whatever, you would go and, you know, explain the whole thing mentally to yourself, right? You remember those times? This is what, if I had just said this and this, and I would have been clever, and I would have said that, and I would have put them in their spot, and I would have blah, 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 blah. Or this is the rationale. I understand this, and I understand that. I'm trying to understand them, and I'm trying to understand me, and this is what. Sometimes you get all that rationale later. But you see, you have all the time in the world if you're working on it this way. You get to stop, you get to think through, you get to go through the rationale. And said, now, out of that, what do I really feel passionate about? What's really important in all that blah, 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 blah rationale about it? All the blah, blah, blah about them and all the blah, blah, blah about me and whatever. What's really important in there? What's the essence of this? And you make a statement, kind of like a mission statement for a business. But you make a statement. This is my passion, is that this, like, for example, about, say, someone lied to you, undermined you. That truth is beautiful and truth is important. And I choose to live and to respond and to be in my truth. And I will be more aware and I will choose more precisely these people that I work with and open to who are not trustworthy. I will find out. I will feel them. I will feel my knowing. Because you see, if you go back to before the trigger, if you have ability to remember it clear enough, you will also remember that before the trigger, you already knew that that stinker was a liar. Right? You already knew it on some level. That something wasn't quite right, and you were just trying to pretend that it was all right so that you wouldn't have to deal with your emotions. But at some point, you know, everything got splattered into your face, and you had to deal with your emotions. But you already knew. So you claim your knowing. When I recognize that people are not trustworthy, when I can sense that, okay, they say they're going to call and they don't, and this goes on a couple of times, I'm going to be more cautious. I'm going to own my feelings. I'm going to respect what I know. I'm going to live my life in my passion. I'm going to really get into the truth, honesty. I'm going to demand it from myself and from others. All right, so when you do that, you imagine yourself in the situation saying to this person something to that effect. And you'll watch, and that person won't have much to say. Or in the circumstance, you'll watch the circumstance shift. You're staying in your power. It will shift. It may not resolve itself positively in the sense of what you were wanting to have done or accomplished, but it will resolve positively in the sense that you will feel good about yourself. You'll feel good. You'll feel good. Even if you now no longer have that business option or that person to work with or whatever it is, you will feel good. But we would say that once you get this technique, then you're going to be able to, in the moment, start calling on it. In the moment, to be able to recognize what's going on. In the moment, to step up and say, here's what I am feeling. Without blame or judgment of the other person, but coming from your heart, coming from your passion, if the anger was in there, or if it was fear, to come from the excitement about what other possibilities you're moving into. Okay, so you're going into the unknown. But why buy into a negative picture? If it's the unknown, it could just as easily be positive, yes? Why buy into a scary picture when you could just buy into a fun picture just as easily? If you're in your power, you can choose which one you buy into. And with hurt, you can look for the love within yourself for you. You'll respond with love. From that self, from your heart. It can be a poignant moment. And in the future, you'll be able to do this more on the spot. And your life will reflect it. Your life will change. Your life will be so much more beautiful, so much more magnificent. People will not be able to manipulate you. You will be too wise. And you'll be able to get those messages in your knowing and be able to work with people to the extent that you can work with them. If there's somebody that you've got to work with or that you would like to still work with, but you know that they're not reliable, can you work with them knowing they're not reliable? You don't want to control them and make them change. If they're going to just, that's the way their MO is, then what you're going to do is that you're not just not going to trust them with stuff. You're going to trust them only with that you know that they're trustworthy about. It's really, there's an example in which the channel and Daniel had a friend. And she was so warm and funny, and they just enjoyed each other's company so much. And they'd have a party or an event, and the friend said, "I'll be there. I'll bring this, and I'll be da 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 da," and all so much excitement and so on, and so forth. And invariably, the day of whatever it is, "Oh, I can't come, my child this, or I can't do this, my husband that, or I can't do this because I inadvertently chose to go to this concert. I can't do whatever." And at first they were very hurt and disappointed. Because there was a good friend, they thought, you know. But after a while they realized that's just the way she is. You just can't count on her to show up. So they didn't count on her to show up anymore. After a couple of times, hey, you know, you get your lesson. It's not a reliable person, but they still loved her company. You know, whenever she could somehow or another, you know, get it together or you know, choose them as company, that'd be fine. Okay. And they didn't take it personally anymore. Others who were like that, before they learned their lesson, you know, kind of alienated with some other people. So you see, life can be really free and much easier for you. Because when you can stand up for yourself, when you can own your truth of yourself, then you can also begin to experience positive emotional states. More bliss, more magic, more joy, more enthusiasm. You know, look at your culture. If there's somebody who's enthusiastic, it makes people nervous, doesn't it? An enthusiastic person, oh my, they must be naive. Poor thing. They're heading for so many disappointments. But it's really a potent force for good, for you, to be enthusiastic, to be happy, more love, more celebration. Once you have processed it in the past a few times and you can see how to reply, how to respond, then you can make that choice in the future. I will activate this. Now, we want to suggest a tip about activating this in the moment. Because sometimes, as you probably can see, that when you process one of the past through and then reframe it and redo it, that it takes a little while to think up what's really going on and figure it out and get the essence of it and know what to say. Can you do that under the spur of the moment? Well, sometimes you cannot. Most of the time you probably cannot. So what we would suggest is what we call the delay reaction. Well, excuse me, that's very interesting. I'm just going to have to think about it. Or I'm going to sleep on it and I'll get with you tomorrow about that. Okay, we'll discuss that. That sounds like a good topic for discussion. And I'm going to go think about it and then I'll come back with you when I'm ready. Do some kind of delay mechanism. Some people can, you know, if you're at work or something and it's a situation at work or whatever it is, you may just have to say, well, excuse me, you know, I'm just going to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back and we'll discuss this. You go to the bathroom and you go, figure it all out. And now inside a nice little stall all by yourself, figure it all out, you know, and then you come out and you're ready. You see, you can make certain steps that will enable you to give yourself enough time to get aware, to get present with it. And we would suggest that even if you mess up, you make your attempt and it just seems to aggravate the situation and you mess up, nevertheless, if you will continue to do this, you might have to go through two or three cycles of it, but if you will continue to do this, we would say that virtually every circumstance is reversible. That seems to be dark, negative, icky. Virtually everyone can be turned around. If it's with people. You know, if it's if it's something like, oh gosh, I lost a whole ton of money. You know, it's that money doesn't necessarily come back the next day. But you can at least emotionally get yourself into a place of optimism and open to the opportunities to make more money and replenish what you had lost. reframe it. So whatever circumstances face you in your life, if you are aware of these emotions that are normally considered bad, negative, dark, and can be very limiting, you can also transform them and you into your freedom, into your light, into your wonderful, glorious life. All right, we're going to take a break. And after the break, we will talk with you with your questions. So think about this, what your an example perhaps, and what your emotional responses were. Let's talk about some of that stuff. We're using your examples. All right, so 20 minutes, and we'll be back. Farewell.